I'm bringing hassle back.
Get your sexy on.
I hope you're ready. Tim Hasselbeck is with us here on 102.5 The Game. Great to catch up with him. Willie Donegan, Derek Mason here with you on this Tuesday afternoon. Tim, let's start it here just because, you know, it's kind of loose in the summer. If I were to ask you, you know, when you walk into your team meeting or when you bump into your players during this time of the year, how many of them would maybe bring up to you, hey, did you see what the Predators did yesterday with the free agent craziness that took place? What percentage of your team might follow the Predators with any kind of level like that?
Wow, that's a great question. I don't know the answer to that, to be honest, like in terms of how dialed into hockey.
Yeah, because they obviously created a huge buzz throughout the league yesterday with a huge binge of free agent signings of heavy name players like Steven Stamkos. I don't know what the equivalent would be, D-Mace in a football, but that's like that would be like signing a Debo Samuel or, you know, somebody like that, a huge accomplished player. You know, it's some people made the reference of Tom Brady going from the Patriots to the Buccaneers. It was that kind of thing on the hockey level. Now, obviously, it doesn't have the same spotlight, but I'm just curious of if that makes it into your circles in your football circles.
You know what's interesting is so my brother Matthew's daughter Mallory, who's a student athlete at Boston College. She plays lacrosse at Boston College. They just won a national championship. Like, she's super dialed into sports, all that stuff. She has a summer internship with the Preds. And we were somewhere yesterday, and she's like her phone is blowing up with all of her friends and just people that she knows and things like that, like, that are like, oh my gosh, like, Preds are going crazy today. Preds are going crazy today. So, like, all day yesterday, she's, you know, communicating about all of their moves and everything like that. And so, so I would say, like, maybe I'm underestimating, you know, the reach, just knowing like what her interaction was yesterday with, and I'm talking about like friends from Boston, you know, that are hockey fans, college hockey fans, you know, that are, you know, seeing players that they know, you know, get signed or drafted. And so I think that, you know, maybe I'm underestimating it. You know, maybe it's the kind of that summertime, you know, fog a bit of a lull sports wise, but yeah, like, look, I do think that, you know, maybe I think the casual fan even got reached. That's probably the best way for me to say it.
We talked with Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst. Now, Tim, I don't know if you've been following this whole NFL lawsuit that has gone on, where the NFL has to repay billions of dollars. If you have, how do you believe it? You know, and I'm sure you've talked with people if you have really dove into this. How do you think this affects the NFL moving forward, that this lawsuit was out there and they lost the lawsuit? Now, I think each team has to pay back X amount of dollars, you know, to sort of settle the lawsuit. But how do you think this affects the NFL moving forward?
Yeah, I think the big thing is, and I've followed it, D-Mace, but like I'm a little bit like, you know, I think it happens a lot of times in, you know, some of these off the field, you know, storylines in terms of, you know, whether it's an ownership group bidding on a team and who's part of it. Like, I probably, like most fans, eventually tire of it, right? You know, so like it's really interesting at first, and then all of a sudden it drags on a little bit, and I think sometimes the interest can wane. And so I think that I've felt like that following the story. How do I think it affects the NFL going forward? I think it's breaking trust, right? Like, I think ultimately, you know, fans are generally smart enough, and I think that when people look around and they think, like, what does it cost for me to watch NFL football games? And they realize like what they are spending in order to see as many NFL games as they can. And then you find information out where you're like, wait a second. Like, I could have been watching these games and all of these games, no matter what market I was in, for a fraction of the price that I've been getting charged for it. Like, I just think it starts to break trust. Now, does that mean that people won't tune in? I think for some it will, but I think, you know, ultimately people love watching football. It's such, it's baked into our culture. But I do think that, you know, eventually you just, you stop believing and you stop trusting the National Football League.
Yeah, so and I can say that the NFL is sort of one of those companies that is recession proof or lawsuit proof, that no matter what happens, they are still going to survive. Why? Because we love the NFL so much that even if they do lose a, you know, billion-plus-dollar lawsuit, they're still going to be able to survive, and not just survive, but they're going to still rack in money like an ATM machine.
I mean, D-Mates, your point about it being recession-proof, like there's nothing that proved that more than the pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
Because, it changed the way we live. It's going to change the way we live for a decade. And the NFL is like, yeah, that's cool. That's cute. Okay, that's great. But we're not giving up. We have so much influence in powerful cities, and we generate so much money in all these economies. And so here's what we're going to do. We're going to keep playing because we're going to get our TV money. And so, we are not playing. And listen, college football was kind of recession-proof, but some of those conferences didn't play. Whereas, the NFL was like, yeah, that's funny, but, we're playing. Right? Bubble, no, we're not doing a bubble. We're not doing that. We're playing football. We're getting our TV money. We are completely recession-proof. And honestly, we just have so much influence, you know, in terms of every local government, every state government, that, we're really going to do whatever we want.
Hmm. Yeah, it seems that way. Another question here, the quarterbacks. Obviously, you know, the AAVs are going up astronomical. I think I saw, they were doing a comparison to quarterbacks, what they made 15 years ago. We talk about top quarterbacks compared to what the guys are making now. And it's damn near, if not double, close to triple. Do you see it stopping? Because as we go, I mean, Dak Prescott is next. You have other quarterbacks that are in line for these huge contracts. I know we had a few signed, Lawrence, guys like that. But now some of these big contracts are really coming up. Do you think there's going to be a cap on the number of what a quarterback can make? Because, listen, in 5-10 years, we're going to see, if not, we're going to see a $70 million quarterback.
Yeah. I don't think there's going to be, because we're going to continue to see the cap grow, right? I mean, the reality, too, is in terms of the revenue that the NFL is going to continue to generate, especially with legalized gambling, the cap is going up. It's just going to continue to rise. It is. TV money's not going anywhere. There's different avenues in terms of streaming. They're capturing, more eyeballs in terms of the audience, especially – overseas, all that stuff. And so the thing I would say is I don't. And then, as the quarterbacks, salaries have gone up, I think we also need to recognize that alongside that, the rules have changed, right? And so quarterbacks are going to play because of the rules. They're going to play longer than they did before. Whereas running back's lifespan hasn't changed. A corner's lifespan hasn't changed. A safety's lifespan, in terms of playing at a high level hasn't changed. But quarterback has. Look, Troy Aikman retired. It was concussions and a back injury. Steve Young, I can still see the hit, Aeneas Williams, put on him a football game. The reality is you can't do that anymore. And so now, Drew Brees plays till he's 40, and Brady and Manning and Aaron Rodgers, and Kirk Cousins is 37 years old. So in the change of the rules, now, like, how long somebody lasts and play at a high level at quarterback, that also has just been skewed. Like it that's grown at a different rate. And so I think that's a part of the reason why more organizations are comfortable saying, like, yeah, we'll invest in you because you might not be an 8-year player. Like, you could be a 15-year player for us.
Tim Hasselbeck is with us. Tim, before we let you go, this is a tricky question, but it's I want to try to keep it somewhat generic, but I'm going to ask you about John Gruden. And like we were talking about with the other lawsuit, mm-hmm. I'm not into all the legalese about it. Yeah. I'm not going through pages and pages trying to figure out exactly what's happening. But I think about this in a broader sense. John Gruden was once a pretty darn good coach and a really good announcer. Yeah. And he has been on the sideline, and we know why, right? He made, let's just put it in a big, broad box, he made some mistakes that have cost him. And at some point, I think that it's fair to ask, has he paid his price? Can he get back into doing a job that he was really good at, whether it's a coach or maybe in the booth someday? Hockey is struggling with this right now with Stan Bowman and Joel Quenneville, who have been suspended for a long time, and rightfully so. They had to pay a penalty for a mistake they made with something that happened, and hockey was a big story. But, you know, after a certain amount of time, it's like Michael Vick. Eventually, people said, you know what, he paid a big price, but he shouldn't be banned for life. What do you think would happen with Gruden here? Do you think at some point he will get back into the football world?
I do, and I just think the appetite for forgiveness is way more likely, you know, coaching again than being on TV, right? Like, I just, you know, I think that, like, to your point, like, Michael Vick, you know, he kind of, you know, like, you just think about, you know, he goes to jail, comes back, he's playing football, like, now he's on TV, right? You know, I don't think that there's an appetite for that in terms of Gruden. And look, I think there are a lot of people that have, I think, as you said, it was probably a good way to say it, just, you know, made mistakes, right? And done things that they wish that they had. I think for Gruden, I mean, look, there are coaches that have, you know, guys that have, you know, DUIs that, like, didn't sit out at all, you know?
Right.
And so, yeah, it's interesting because I do think that John Gruden is somebody that, you know, had a significant impact on the National Football League. Right? Like, I think there are some coaches where you can look at them and say, man, like, they just had, like, yeah, they were successful as a coach, but they also had, you know, a very unique impact on the game. Like, I think you could say the same for coaches like Bill Walsh or Joe Gibbs or Bill Parcells and Sean Payton and, you know, obviously Bill Belichick. Like, there are Pete Carroll. Like, there are coaches that you're like, you know, they definitely made an impact on the National Football League, whether it was X's and O's or, you know, how they related to players, whatever it may be. And, like, Gruden fits in that box. Like, he absolutely does. And so, and none of the guys that I mentioned are perfect. So,
right. Like, for example, Payton had to sit out. He was suspended, and he had to work his way back in. And so every case is different, right, depending on the circumstances. But I do think it's – sometimes I think you have a really strong public push by some people who have said, this guy should never coach again or whatever, right? But at some point I think we have to look at it when a certain amount of time has gone by.
No, no doubt. I mean, think about Greg Williams.
Yes.
You know, Greg Williams, and I think part of the reason there was never really an appetite for Greg Williams to get back in is just, you know, he kind of had a bit of an abrasive personality, probably wasn't, you know, always great with certain media members and, you know, probably represented himself in a way that came across as kind of a high ego guy and those types of things. And so when it comes time to, you know, I guess hoping for some forgiveness or people to say, you know, give him some grace as he gets back in, like, it just wasn't there. Like, it didn't exist. Whereas I think that whether it's somebody that's not as high profile or whether it's somebody that, you know, has a lot of allies, you know, in the media world or, you know, that type of thing, then, Yeah, I think he had an influence. And to be honest, in some ways, it's no different than Hall of Fame voting, right? Mm-hmm. Like, think about Terrell Owens. Like, what? Like, that's crazy, you know, to think that he went through what he went through in terms of Hall of Fame. And then there's other people that weren't nearly as good of players, but, you know, were fantastic in terms of building relationships in their local media. And look at how that impacted that voting.
It's a broad topic for sure. We're out of time for now. But, Tim, great to catch up with you. Have a great 4th of July weekend with your family, and we'll talk again soon.
Sounds good. See you guys.
All right. Tim Hasselbeck joining us here on 102.5 The Game. We're back to wrap up the show here in just a moment. We'll look ahead to Stillman and Company. You're listening to 102.5 The Game.